Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Discover a healthcare team that's always here for you at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
And Ciara Dignam, her big gig is on the 27th of December, and that was always Aslan's traditional gig. I might have said November earlier, but you can look it up on Ciara Dignam Music on Facebook. Now, time for our Friday gathering. I'm joined in the studio by Fianna Fáil's Minister of State at the Department of Children, Equality, Disability, Integration and Youth, Anne Rabbitt, People Before Profit TD Richard Boyd Barrett, Ciara Phelan, political correspondent with the Irish Examiner, and Jack Horgan-Jones, political reporter with the Irish Times. You're all very welcome. Thank you for coming in today. Well, clearly we're going to start with the RTE story because we're here to talk about the big news of the week. And just going back to Timmy Dooley, Senator Timmy Dooley on Morning Ireland this morning, he was talking about Marty Morrissey. He warned about scapegoating people through the process of getting to the bottom of the culture in RTE. Richard, do you agree with him?
Yeah, well, certainly, I don't think this is about witch hunting people, but it is about getting to the truth. And first thing I would say is that we still, on the central issue that instigated this, we still don't know the truth. I mean, the executive acknowledged that there was, quote, an organised deception of the public, of the workers in RTE and of the Oireachtas. And we still don't know who organised that deception. And until we have all the relevant witnesses in and all the information, we're not going to find out. So I think that's the central thing. Mm-hmm. But then,
but do you think that you know you need to know things like Marty Morrissey had the loan of a car for 5 years? Is that important?
I think when the people who pay for public service broadcasting can go to jail for not paying their TV licence, and they do, then they have a right to know how their money is spent. And if that money, that their money is being spent in ways that are excessive, and that where there are people indulging themselves at their expense. I think they have a right to know that without wanting to sort of, you know, witch hunt people. But I think they have a right to transparency mm-hmm. around those things. But I also think then we have to look at the systemic issues. And, you know, I mean, to my mind, clearly there's when you look at the sort of anger among the workers in here, who were told to pay cuts, pay freezes, deal with bogus self-employment, and then they see a relatively small number at the top receiving secret payments, laundered through, you know, accounts that were hidden, very excessive salaries at the top. They have a right to have a grievance. And then there's also the systemic issue of the impact of commercial advertising and how that then threatens to contaminate and would appear has contaminated the public service remit of RTE. I think all of those things need to be addressed in the public interest and in the interest of public service broadcasting, and which we want to protect.
Can I hear from you on this? What Timmy Dooley said this morning about Marty Morrissey and the fact that, well, Richard used the word, you know, this shouldn't be a witch hunt. But do you think it's important that we know about all of these things?
Yeah, but I agree with Richard. We need to go back to the start. How did we find ourselves in this situation? And has the question been answered? It should not be a witch hunt by no manner or means. Absolutely not. But we do need to know about the structures and the governance. And we still don't know about the structures and the governance. We still don't have the answer as to who came up with the wording for the invoice, the consultant. That's where this all started from.
Yeah.
We don't have that answer. So look, I welcome the fact that Ryan and Mr. Kelly is going before the Oireachtas next week. Perhaps they'll bring some light on that. I have no doubt that they will, because I do genuinely believe there's a lot hinging on Ryan Tuberty's career on this by going before the Oireachtas committee next week. We're expecting a lot from him to actually be out front and truthful. And to be honest with you,
just worth saying, the Grant Thornton report, the initial one, found no evidence of wrongdoing when it comes to Ryan Tuberty.
Absolutely. And nor am I saying anything like that. What I am trying to say here is we don't know who came up with the wording consultancy. That has not been answered. We've had three Oireachtas committee meetings at this stage and we still haven't got that answer. Mm. Yeah. That answer is for the board, the executive to answer. They have failed to answer. Why have we gone into the weeds on this, Claire? The reason we've gone into the weeds is they've left themselves open to question after question because they haven't been open, transparent and truthful in their answering. That's why we're here at the moment. And that's why it's getting into nitty gritty about the likes of Marty and everything else. We don't need to know everything that we need to know that there's good governance, good procedures, because see, we know that there's brilliant people here. And the people are hurting out here, and we have sympathy for them, to be quite honest with you, because if you can't have a telephone line fixed out here, but yet at the same time you can spend 5,000 on flip-flops, there's a wrongness there.
Even last night, Ciara, we had more information on spending, and you know, we've heard this thing about the drip-drip of information going to the committees, but when it came to the events that RTE paid for Renault, we were told they cost 47,000. Primetime had a look at the numbers. They actually cost 70,000 euros.
Yeah, and it's this whole idea of the constant revelations. If Primetime were able to pull that together very quickly, why isn't it that that wasn't disclosed at the media committee when the documentation was supplied? Like that, it's money, it's an extra additional 22,000 euro that wasn't disclosed. So it only further erodes the trust and the transparency. And that's the heart of all of this, is the transparency in what has emerged. So when you continuously hear a drip feed of new information, it's not helping to get to the bottom of what went on here. I think in terms of the Marty Morrissey situation, it's obviously very different to what had happened with Ryan Tuberty. But obviously he felt that he shouldn't have had the car because he returned it. And also there's further questions about, you know, these car deal agreements, what had happened, given that Adrian Lynch, the interim DG at the committee, when pressed further on it, he said that, you know, there's up to 1,800 employees. He was waiting to get further information. And I think a lot of people welcome, maybe not so within the organisation, but some will, to be able to see then that RTE will publish this list of interests that they've committed to.
The register
to
of interests.
Yes, I think that'll be very welcome. I think that what has emerged in the newspapers and journalists have done deep dives into what exactly other RTE presenters and staff members are actually getting money for. It's quite surprising. We have seen the removal of images on social media from certain presenters because they were on RTE premises.
But is that a symptom of how people are employed? Like, people might be employed on a contract that has, I don't know, for argument's sake, let's say 20 hours a week. They're not employed by RTE. Mm-hmm. They're not staff. So are they not entitled to go out and make money elsewhere?
They are. They are. But I think what we have seen, the removal of social media posts, is that maybe there wasn't approval given to have the picture taken on the premises.
Well, pictures taken on the premises promoting another
brand. Exactly.
That's a given. That's wrong.
Yeah, and that was happening.
Yeah. And also, there should be transparency around what those other deals are so that everybody's clear that this is what you're doing. Jack, just that on that issue of the additional cost of the Renault gigs, the 22,000, I suppose it's an indication of the scramble internally in RTE and the upheaval that this has caused in trying to get all of this documentation together.
Yeah, and they were asked for a huge amount of information by both the Oireachtas Media Committee and the Public Accounts Committee. So I suppose, on the one hand, you can understand how there may be individual errors when you're pulling together hundreds or thousands of line items within Excel spreadsheets. But on the other hand, it furthers this impression that the organisation corporately and at an executive level has been unable to get its ducks in a row and is constantly having to kind of revise details or issuing information which it then kind of rapidly contradicts or then contradicts itself again. So we had, for example, the big issue of the barter account this week, which initially Rich Collins, the CFO, said there was only one. And then RTE itself, in a document that was sent to the media committee, said there are three accounts. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a direct quote. So it was then reported Tuesday into Wednesday, the emergence of more barter accounts. Then Richard Collins on Wednesday in the media committee says there's one account, but there's three companies. Now, does it ultimately matter whether there's three accounts or one account or three companies? Like, you know, the truth lies probably somewhere in between. But like the overall impression here is an entity that can't agree with itself and can't offer a straight explanation or an understandable explanation as to, you know, this situation, and more importantly, a credible explanation as to how it's going to pull itself out of this. And I think that's why you see Simon Harris going on. I can't remember whether it was your programme or Morning Ireland this morning. Saying patience has now effectively run out, and they're sending in the external kind of overseers now in the form of forensic accountants.
Yeah, there's another issue here as well. And politicians talk all the time about caring about RTE, caring about public service broadcasting and caring about the staff. But we have four Oireachtas committees who will hear about this issue next week. We also have three separate strands of an inquiry. So we have two external reviews and the auditor coming in. Should the politicians step back now and let those processes happen, Richard?
No, I think they have a part to play, to be honest, because, you see, there is a public interest, and this is supposed to be an entity that serves a public interest, and therefore the voice of the public has to be heard. And as imperfect as the political system is, that's supposed to be our job,
mm-hmm.
that we're elected to represent the public interest. Now, obviously, you know, I particularly, because I'm very passionate about public service broadcasting, about the arts, about culture, and you don't want politicians controlling those things in terms of their output. But we do have a responsibility to make sure the public who funds them are getting what they should get, and that there's proper governance, and that there's not, you know, creaming off, creative accounting, excessive benefits or salaries going to people, and that the workers in RTE mm-hmm. and in publicly funded institutions generally are being treated properly. So all of these things we have a responsibility.
There's the issue of independence. There's fear around that now. But there's also the issue in the short term of just creating a circus here around this with four committee appearances next week when you have three investigations happening in the coming weeks and months.
But to be honest, if we hadn't had, and I know there's a danger of the circus, okay? And by the way, you know, if you like, the government and all of the political system has a certain responsibility in all of this, because I think there are systemic problems mm-hmm. that should have been addressed much earlier, that have helped create the conditions for this. That's without excusing bad behaviour, because I think there's been bad behaviour somewhere here, right? But so we have a responsibility in that regard, and we need to face up. We need to face up to that responsibility. But I also think, to be honest, sometimes it takes a crisis to get necessary reforms. And I personally believe that there are quite a few other publicly funded institutions in this country where we need to lift the bonnet in the way the bonnet has been lifted in RTE, okay, okay. precisely to protect them. I mean, I've made the point about the film industry. I've been saying it for ages.
Yeah, I heard you saying that at the
committee the other day. And I think that needs to be looked at.
And what do you want to say about that, about all of this happening together and there being so much attention focused on all of these different strands of inquiry?
I'll be honest with you, Claire, I'll go back again to the start. I couldn't come in here and not have straight answers for you, because you'll keep going and going till you get the answer out of me. One thing I was taught when I was doing media interviews the first day ever, if you're asked a straight question, give a straight answer, because the journalist will move on. Politicians are no different on the opposite side of the Oireachtas when they ask a straight question. Straight questions were asked the first day ever. They didn't get them. They went back in again the second day. They got a little. They didn't get as much. They started coming with more information last week. That is not how I would have expected the executive or the board of RTE, as a professional outfit representing such a large organisation, to behave. I don't even feel there's energy amongst them when they're presenting. They're not sharing notes. They're not relying on each other. I don't feel there's that team effort of responsibility.
So you feel the committees should keep going, well, despite the fact that the independent inquiry.
But the independent inquiry, we won't have answers for about 7 months.
Yeah.
All right. And every day there's a different story. So in actual fact, what I would appeal to the executive, I would love to see them away from the Oireachtas, because there's far more important things going on that needs to be discussed, to be quite honest with you, or equally as important, I should say, equally as important. But what I would love to see is that there's enough information there that the likes of Niamh Smith, who is doing a phenomenal job in chairing the media that committee, is that she can say, actually, we should leave it at this stage. We have enough information. We've done our job as Oireachtas.
But they need to get to that point where she's
they
comfortable
haven't got
saying
to.
It. Jackie wanted to come in there on that.
Yeah, look, I don't think anyone should be naive about Oireachtas committees and assume their motives are always as pure as the driven snow. I mean, these are populated by politicians and they act politically and sometimes for narrow political gain and for the minute on the 6-1 or whatever. But I do think that both committees have added value to this whole process, and they have established facts that sometimes had to be dragged out of the executive present, but they have moved the story on and added to the sum total of knowledge in a way that has been difficult as journalists covering it. You know, I think that the Oireachtas committee, empowered as it is, getting straight answers from people or attempting to get straight answers from people, is a powerful tool. That being said, I think once the next round is through and once we have heard from effectively everyone, particularly from Ryan Tuberty and Noel Kelly, there is the outstanding question of Jim Jennings. I think he probably will ultimately come before a committee, and Dee Forbes. But once that round is done, I do think it might be helpful if the committee's kind of held back a little little bit, not in totality. And I think that it will be helpful as well if they continued a correspondence with RTE, and if that correspondence fell short, then they could go back into pulling people in for public session. And I do think that it's important there's an element of publicity attached to this, and I think it's very important that those reports, as they are ongoing over the 6-7 months that they're underway, that there are interim reports. We were told there was going to be interim reports, and then the government started kind of backing away from that a little bit. They were saying, oh, it depends how long it goes on, and if it goes on a certain time, there will be interim reports, but we're not sure whether it's going to be published. I do think that, you know, sunlight is the best disinfectant here, and we've seen that.
I'm going to interrupt you there because I have Seamus Dooley, the Irish Secretary of the NUJ, on the line, and Seamus is just out of a meeting with the incoming Director General of RTE, Kevin Backhurst. Good morning, Seamus.
Good morning, Claire.
Thanks very much for joining us. I know you were in all morning chatting to Kevin Backhurst. What did he say to you?
Well, first of all, it's no surprise that he hasn't preempted his announcements on Monday, but it was a positive engagement in that he acknowledged, as indeed did the Human Resources Director, the genuine regret at the way at the pain that has been inflicted upon staff, but more positively, a firm commitment to work with staff and unions to restore the faith and confidence of staff in RTE. There were no major details. We went through outstanding some of the concerns that we had, which have already been well ventilated, and there was a positive atmosphere. It was robust. We left them in under no illusion as to the depth of feeling of the staff. He has indicated that he will be meeting staff, that he intends to, not just in Dublin but around the country. But obviously his schedule is going to be in some ways dictated as well by the parliamentary debates. But it was a frank and honest discussion. He hasn't outlined any further proposals in relation to the board restructuring, which is something we have been looking for. But so generally a good atmosphere, very direct, and we would hope that we can do business with them, and we know that, but they will have to work hard to win back the trust of staff.
Okay, and we know that in 2019, when some of these issues were going on that we're just finding out about in the last few weeks, RTE was seeking pay reductions from staff and from unions. So now you're looking at a situation where that relationship, Seamus, between the staff, as you say, and the unions and RTE has broken. Did Kevin Backhurst address how those relationships can be rebuilt?
Well, we were sitting in the same room as we were lied to, so that was very real. You know, we were told lies by in terms of the pay cuts, and what he said was openness, transparency, honesty, and a return to public service values. Mm-hmm. And that's the best we can hope for in an initial meeting. But the proof will be that we can't ever again be lied to, because trust and honesty is the fundamental principle of industrial relations. And the letter produced at the Dáil from G. Forbes to Tubridy, telling him that he would not get a pay cut for 5 years, at a time when they had frozen increments unilaterally and 6 months before pay cuts, that really was a blow to trust at the level of trade unions, but also the level of each individual member of staff. He knows that is a trust, which is not trust is much easier to break than to restore.
And Seamus, I know that you wanted more clarity on what a register of interest for RTE staff would look like. Did you get that this morning?
There is a commitment that they will engage fully on what a register of interest is. We were unhappy that there hasn't been cooperation or consultation with staff on the announcement, but that was really effectively a function of commitments given to Parliament against the deadline. But there will be direct engagement with us on what a declaration of interest is. We actually believe in the declaration of interest. We believe in openness, transparency, but that has to start with the executive board and the leadership. We have no issue with declaration of interest. We have no difficulty with the register. We will sit down and we will work through what that could look like. And we believe that that also has to be seen in the reaffirming and the enforcement of policies around potential conflicts of interest in relation to commercial consideration.
And Seamus, he said to you, as you mentioned there, that he's going to talk to the staff, he's going to go out to the regions and talk to RTE staff there as well. How and when is he going to do that? Did he tell you?
No, there's no timetable for that, because this is an evolving story, but it is his intention to meet staff as soon as it's practicable. He hasn't set a timetable, and I suppose in fairness to the Director General, given the pace of change and the workload being imposed by all of these inquiries, it would be quite hard to nail those down, but it has to happen soon. And what we would be concerned about is that while we welcome the investigation, we welcome the inquiries, we do not want RTE mired in so many ongoing processes that the job of running the organisation becomes impossible. So that's the balance which is going to have to be struck.
Seamus, thank you very much. Seamus Dooley there from the NUJ, who's just had a meeting with the incoming Director General of RTE, Kevin Backhurst. Just one other issue in relation to this I want to touch on. Toy Show the Musical, Richard, and you spoke about actors and equity and fairness and all of that the other day at the committee. We had Alan Hughes on here yesterday, the pantomime producer. And he said to me about Rory Coveney, who was one of those overseeing the musical for RTE, what planet is he living on if he doesn't think the Toy Show was competing with all the Christmas shows around Dublin and across the country? It makes my blood boil. We found out that it lost 2.2 million euro for RTE. The Public Accounts Committee is going to discuss it further. What do you make of that?
Well, I mean, it's a shocking loss, and, you know, looking at it, and to be honest, I wasn't following it closely at the time, but it seems like they really overreached themselves and, as you said, did something that was going to impact on all sorts of other actors and performers and so on. And one of the lessons I would take from
that... Well, they say that they offered employment to actors and performers.
Yeah, and that's true too. And by the way, I also accept, particularly with the arts, sometimes you make mistakes, right? Doing art is not a perfect science, and that's the nature of it. It's experimental.
A 2.2 million euro mistake?
But exactly. And one of the lessons I would draw from this is the need to engage with the actors, the performers, the writers, the directors, the crew, in terms of developing these ideas, right? And not just a small select few, possibly driven by certain commercial considerations or a small group of insiders at the top. And this is why I often draw the analogy with the closely related film industry, is that, you know, the allegation from the crew, from the actors, the writers and performers, is that the vast majority of them are kind of not really being engaged with properly, not treated properly, and that there's a relatively small group of insiders making all the big decisions and who are largely, if you like, make decisions about how money and resources are allocated. Now, I think that needs to be addressed, because if you listen to the people at the base of the industry, I think you will learn a lot. And I would also say the government need to do that. I mean, I raised the point with Adrian Lynch the other day, had he met the unions to discuss with the staff, and he said, no, I haven't, and I will, and he did, in fairness. I think the government also should be talking to the workers in here, right? And to hear their side of the story.
And do you agree with that?
Talking to the workers?
Yeah.
Absolutely. I do. But I do believe that Minister Martin, she has a lot on her plate at the moment, as in starting the whole process between the forensic accounting and everything else. I have not heard her say she won't.
She was asked a question yesterday about the licence fee. And Keir, will you remind us what she said? Because I think some people were quite surprised.
Yeah, I was quite surprised at the response myself, saying that she wasn't going to tell people what to do.
On paying the licence fee or not?
On paying the licence fee. It's the law to pay the licence fee. And Leo Varadkar later in the day said, you know, that he would urge people to pay the licence fee. It's the law. And
yeah, would you urge people to pay the licence fee?
Absolutely, Anne? Without a shadow of a doubt. News coverage has to continue, sports coverage. The staff that are working here need to be supported. By paying the licence fee is paying the wages at the end of the day. So absolutely. I think also the Taoiseach came and Ryan came out as well, Minister McGrath came out. So absolutely.
Okay, I want to move on now, because there are other things happening in the world and in the country. And one of the things that happened was the extension of free GP care to 500,000 people. And we had Dr. Yvonne Williams on here during the week, just explaining how stretched their resources are, all of the extra demands that this is going to place on them. And how do you respond to that?
I listened to the interview, Claire, and I thought you made very valid points, to be quite honest with you. But I do also believe we're held to account all the time in relation to Sláintecare and the rollout of Sláintecare and the development of it, and this was one of the elements, one of the commitments of it, and we have to press forward, and that is one piece. And at the same time, her point in relation to the community, like, an awful lot of work has gone in increasing capacity in older person service, the EPOC teams in the community, so we are trying to actually take away some of the work as well from the GPs by putting in other community based resources. So I do welcome the fact that the expansion of
You're a constituency TD along with being a government minister. You know people can't get to see the doctor for 3 weeks.
Absolutely, and I know that we don't have enough GPs, and that's why I do welcome what Minister Donnelly and Minister Harris did with announcing the expansion of the intake of medical practitioners. More of that needs to happen, to be quite honest with you, because we have an ageing population of GPs. It's not attractive to work in the GP sector at the moment, and that's why I do think the expansion of other elements of community care to take that workload off them has to be welcomed.
Mm-hmm. Is it cart before the horse though, Jack? Is that what you're hearing?
Well, look, I think to an extent, yes, but all policies are, you know, particularly in health and housing and stuff like that. You pull the policy lever and you don't know whether it works for a couple of years. But I think that ultimately people will judge this on how it feels in their day-to-day lives. You know, this is obviously something that Anne's colleague, Stephen Donnelly, will say he had a landmark achievement when he was in office. It'll be on all the pamphlets next time out. But if people feel services disimproving or stagnating, I think that's the kind of thing that forms voter intent much more than any kind of claim or any kind of political flag.
On the pamphlets the next time out, you think it's an election move?
I think ultimately everything is an election move at this stage, to be honest. I think we're on that glide path now, to be frank.
Ciara?
Yeah, I mean, like, putting the cart before the horse is the exact point. Like, Anne, you're saying that, you know, it was a commitment and slow into care, but you have to take into consideration the pressures that the doctors are already under. We've seen an influx of, obviously, we've taken in over 80,000 Ukrainians as well. That's already put pressure on the system. And what the doctors are essentially saying is some of them can't take their annual leave, they're facing burnout, and that people as a result of this will be waiting for appointments for weeks on end. Mm-hmm. And
to be fair though, if you have a 6 or 7 year old, this is great.
Oh, it's fantastic. It's a very progressive move by the government, but is it the right time to do it when the GPs and the doctors saying that the services aren't in place?
When is the right time? You know what I mean? Like, it's going to take us 4 years for more GPs to come online. Mm-hmm.
Maybe the right time to do it is when you have a system that can provide the service.
The last time I was out when we did Sláintecare and we were announcing, or when a lot of the moves were done in it, all of the kids that I said to when I knocked on the doors, you will have free GP care when they're 5 or 6, are now 8 and 9, so they've missed out on it. So we need to actually make the bold and progressive moves, and at the same time building up community resources, building up.
What do you say to
teams.
People? What do you say to people in a year's time if GP waiting lists have disimproved and waiting times have disimproved? Like, what do you say?
We put more people through the top of the funnel, and what we're doing, Jack, to be honest with you here, like, Minister Butler is working in older person services, ensuring that we've more of these EPOC teams with 45 dementia daycare centres. We didn't have them when we came into government 3 years ago. We're continuously building resources within the community to enhance community care, to take pressures off acute and also take pressures off our GPs. So we will be judged on that rollout.
Okay, Richard, you want to come in there on that?
Yeah, look, I'm in favour of the extension of free GP care. And in fact, I think we should move as rapidly to the declaration of a national health service and free cradle to the grave healthcare. And the reason I say that is, and I'm not saying this is easy, but there's a huge dysfunctionality in the health service that I think ultimately flows from, and this is a little bit like the RTE silo thing, the thing is totally siloed and fragmented, right? We have a two-tier, in fact, we don't even have a two-tier health system. We have a totally fragmented. There's one private body owns this bit of the health service, there's a charity owns another bit, there's the HSE owns another bit, there's, you know, big business people own another bit. So we don't have an integrated joined up health service, and I think there's a lot more capacity and resources. And then critically, you've got to I was talking to a doctor about this the other day who's planning to leave, and you know why he's leaving? Because he can't afford the rents. That's why he's leaving the country. He can't afford the rents.
All right, we've got to leave it there. That's taking us into a whole other problem that we will no doubt discuss again. Thank you all for coming in at Anne Rabbitt, Richard Boyd Barrett, Jack Horgan-Jones and Ciara Phelan. That's all we've time for this week. Thank you for listening. The RT Radio app is there for you to catch up on anything you might have missed. A big thank you once again to the entire team working here on the programme. The show today was produced by Rachel Graham. The series producer is Alistair McConnell. Research by Emma Cawley. Louise Kerr-Ross as our broadcast coordinator and Gar Duffy on sound. Over now to Louise.
Thank you, Claire. Have a lovely weekend. Thank you. Now on the